Hey everyone, welcome to Your Enneagram Coach, the podcast. I'm Beth McCord, your Enneagram Coach. Now, we're doing a really unique series, and it's me interviewing 9 types of moms. And today you're going to hear from type 1 moms and what their journey is like in being a principled reformer. As a type 1, the highs and the lows and everything in between. Well, moms out there, have you ever wished you could be with other people that understand you? I mean, like really understand you? Well, that's what this is all about. So often we read books or hear speakers or get advice from people that are not of our same Enneagram type, and it just misses the mark. They don't get us, and then we feel either guilty or shame or not validated and understood. So this summer, we put something together really unique and amazing, and it's Enneagram for Mom Cohorts. And registration is open right now, this week. And so May 6th to May 13th. Now, the groups are going to start June 10th, the week of June 10th, all the way to the week of July 29th. There are 9 types, right? But there is a morning cohort for each and an evening cohort. So you can pick which one fits you best. But here's the thing. There are only 25 spots. So if you're interested, you gotta jump in as soon as possible to get your spot at yourenneagramcoach.com/cohorts. And we're doing this over 8 weeks with a certified coach leading the way. You'll have a private Facebook group so that you can carry on the conversation and the relationships with the people in your group. And there's gonna be so many other fun bonuses that you're gonna get. Again, don't miss out. Well, this comes on the forefront of another really big thing that we have going on, which is my new Enneagram book, Enneagram for Moms, releasing on July 9th. You can pre-order it right now at any of the retailers out there that sell books. And then you'll want to go to enneagramformoms.com and let us know that you already bought the book, because there's a lot of free goodies that you can get. So go check that out. So today's episode is me talking with 3 type 1 moms. This gives you a little sneak peek of what those cohorts are going to be like. We're going to be able to talk authentically and about the highs, the strengths of the type 1, but also some of the struggles that maybe a type 1 mom wouldn't normally talk about or share. And this can be very validating for those that are type 1 moms out there, but also it can help those that are not type 1 moms to better understand what they're going through. So let's jump in right now and listen in to my conversation with the type 1 moms. All right, so here we are with 2 type 1s, and one of the type 1s that was going to be here, she had an emergency, so she's not here, but we still got 2 type 1 here today. So why don't you guys go ahead and introduce yourselves for everyone?
Okay, my name is Alyssa Ramsey, and I am married to my husband, Ryan. We have 2 children. My son is 12, and my daughter is 8, and I am Jeff and Beth's executive assistant, so... That's what
it is. Awesome. So fun. So amazing. All right, Jen.
Yeah, my name is Jen Couch. I've been married to my husband, Craig, coming up on 29 years this May. And we have 2 adult children in their mid-20s. And now I'm in my almost mid-50s and started a group called SoberSis to help women become more sober-minded, more awake, alert, aware, and present in their own lives.
Yeah. And I know we're going to hear a little bit more about that during our time together. First, I have a quick question. When's your anniversary?
It is May 13th.
Okay. Because I was like, holy cow, we're celebrating 29 years, May 20th.
Oh, and my husband and I are pulled a duo there.
But and still, Ryan and I are celebrating 15 years on the 30th of May.
Oh my gosh. Back. We don't live in the same area. We could celebrate together.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's fun. Okay. So let's dive into being a type 1 mom. Now you guys are perfect at it. No,
not at all.
So being the principled reformer, what are some of the natural things that God has gifted you with that reflect Him in beautiful ways that just naturally overflow in being a type one mom that you've been able to reflect on and notice that that really helps your family, yourself, your kids, and you're really just thankful for those qualities. Alyssa, why don't we start with you?
Well, what comes to mind is just, I guess, probably my way of keeping things like organized and orderly at home. My husband commented the other day, like, if something happened to you, like, I would not know to, like, where to find anything if I had to try and keep stuff like in control here at home myself. So I think that's helpful. And then I, at a young age, actually really struggled with, you know, trying to keep my schoolwork organized and finding things and remembering to do things. And so I had a really good teacher in like second or third grade who really helped me kind of get some of that stuff put in place that I would say helps me to this day. And so I feel like my ability to do that now is really helping me do that in my own kids, especially for my daughter. And I would not say we're super successful at it yet, but we're getting there. We're making improvements, and just trying to help them try and be more organized and responsible with their things that they have control over. So,
yeah, that's awesome. Jen, what about you? What are some of the strengths?
Okay, Alyssa, that's so funny that you were talking about school because I loved school. In fact, I'm a kid from the 80s and I loved my Trapper Keeper. I loved my Trapper Keeper and all things organized. So when you said organized, that's definitely what came to mind. I wouldn't say I'm always as neat and tidy as a lot of the Enneagram 1, I guess you could say, kind of stereotypes out there. I'm pretty crazy and creative over here, but always organized in the sense that we have a joke at my house that we're never out of milk. We're never like not going to have what we need to do what we're doing because I've already thought about it. Super responsible. Do I drop balls? Absolutely. Do I make mistakes? All the time. But I don't really forget stuff. And you're going to have what you need. I'm pretty proactive, I guess, as a wife, as a mother, as kind of CEO of my own home. I'm always trying to be a step ahead and think preemptively, what are we going to need? And then I have it. I love that. I always loved, you know, the diaper bag, the baby bag. I was like, God, no prep. It's in here.
Yeah.
I like how you said that because I feel like, what were you saying with being like preemptive of thinking ahead? Because I feel like, where was I going with that? We might have to cut this part because I'm totally forgetting what I was going to say.
Well, that's okay. I was going to say later. Yeah. So I was just wondering, so when your kids were infants, what was your diaper bag like? And you're kind of prepping for church or going to the grocery store or whatever. What was that like as a young mom, as a type one?
Yeah. Are you asking me? Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. I mean, I had everything. I had two or three outfits and I had, you know, everything that you could think of I had with me because I was prepared for the possibility of whatever it might be that would happen. Multiple toys. My kids often were toted. My husband being a pastor, we took our kids everywhere. Worship practices, meetings, whatever it was, they just came with us everywhere. So I always had plenty of snacks and plenty of activities. And I would say even to this day, I still do that. My purse has crayons and mini card games and, you know, whatever it could be in there to, you know, be there in the possibility that we have to randomly go somewhere and the kids have to come along and I need something to feed them or entertain them while they wait. So.
And so a lot of people can hear that. And I think a lot of types would probably do that to different degrees. But I love to hear the why behind it, right? So the type six would definitely think of all the worst case scenarios and prepare for it. But I'm sure as a type one, I mean, that's part of it. I'm sure, you know, because we've all been there. Well, maybe you guys didn't. We've all been there where we did forget the diaper or the extra pair of clothes. And so we kind of learn our lesson. But what is the why behind why you had all of those things prepared? What was the fear if you didn't have those things?
Oh, I'll tell you that right now. Go for it. In my head, I'm like, oh, I know. Because I always, especially when taking the kids out in public to a restaurant or whatever, I always had the special placemat that I only pulled out at restaurants. And I think I did that because I wanted to set them up for success to be able to behave and be, you know, be great kids, because I set them up for success. Not in necessarily an achieving way, but more like in a, I don't want to bring my kids into a restaurant or a grocery store strung out in need of a nap, not prepared for what they need. They can't show up their best self that way. So I'm going to do everything as a mom in my human power to like set them up to do well. And I felt like I gave them the foundation to make right choices or have a good experience out in public, because I thought it through, then they would have a higher chance of doing that. And most of the time they did. I kind of had a, because I had a schedule, I was growing kids God's way. Now with the Ezo, I was all in and fortunately had healthy children that adhered very well to a schedule. So I planned all of my errands, all of my tasks around that schedule. So rarely did I contend with a super fussy kid, because I knew their time to not be fussy was my window that we could all have a good time.
Everything
was really flowing that way. In those younger years, it eliminated a lot of chaos by setting them up for success.
That's good. I think if I was to try and like piggyback off that a little bit, would be just, I think for me, and we've talked about it before, Beth, was my fear of like my kids maybe acting out and then being concerned about what the repercussions of that would be, whether it be, you know, embarrassment or having to try and discipline them or control their behavior in public, or maybe what others might think if my kids weren't behaving like I wanted them to or expected them to. So I think that all kind of,
and I'm assuming it's not because a type three possibly could be more like, what do people think, as in like image, am I admired, do I have status, in that kind of a realm. But for a one, I'm assuming that it's, what do people think? Am I doing the wrong thing? Am I making a mistake? Is that, or are they judging me or being critical in their mind of me? Is that probably what it is?
Absolutely. Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. That resonates with me too.
Yeah. Well, that's really fun. And you know, I love the whole, Jen, like what you're saying, like I had the special placemat, you know, and it was,
I had one of those too.
As you guys were saying that, I was thinking, okay, I can see a lot of my one that came out when my kids were younger. But, and it was true, but mine was to keep the peace, and it was to not have the chaos, but it was so that I didn't have to deal with, so everyone could be at peace and happy and fine. And I didn't want to have to discipline, especially in public, because I didn't want them to feel ashamed or corrected in front of other people. And I'm sure you guys felt that same way. I wanted them to feel seen and like they're important. And so I too wanted to set them up really well. So I love kind of hearing that, but kind of knowing my perspective as a nine, it was just a little bit different. It was, there were probably more times than what you guys would experience that I would forget to set them up well by having all the things that I need to have. And that's what's so amazing about our types. And I utilize the type one part of my heart, the wing, but I'm still a nine, you know? And so hearing you guys, it's really intriguing to know, wow, you guys are doing a fabulous job setting your kids, your family up for success the best way you can. And I'm glad that people can hear that, because there are going to be some people listening to this that had type one moms that weren't maybe as healthy, and, or they didn't even know that was what was behind some of the things they experienced. Like they were trying to do what was right, but what they experienced was something very different. So I just want to say thank you for sharing how amazing type one moms can be, but it's also really hard. And there's times where, you know, those qualities slip into a less healthy category and it's not as great. Can you share with some things that you notice as a type one mom that is an actual struggle and it might impact your family in a less, in a way that's just less as, I guess, needed or wanted with your family?
Yeah, I'll go. I think, you know, when I think of being an Enneagram one, I kind of see myself as, you know, a rational reformer. Like I want to make it make sense and, you know, kind of move the needle. Like let's make this work. And so because of that, and I do, and Beth, you know this about me, I've got a very strong 9 wing as well.
Yeah.
And so I think if you combine a strong, you know, a 1 with a really strong 9 wing, I'm kind of an idealist. Mm-hmm. I have a real ideal of a way I think things should go. If we all play by the rules, we all do the right thing. Everyone's in their lane. Everyone's in the right seat. Everyone's paying attention. Then we should, you know, A plus B should equal C. And in reality land, that's not the case. A plus B may not even equal C. Wait, what?
Yeah.
And maybe everyone's not going to follow the rules or be as idealistic as I am. And so that was a constant adjustment of like, oh, wow, I had this great picnic planned at the park. And I brought the little ranch for the little carrots and blah, blah, blah. And now they're fighting on the blanket. Yeah. Wait, this was not part of the scene in my mind of the relational perfection that I had assumed that we could all just take the high road, peaceably get along and do the right thing. And so when natural occurrences of it's too hot, people are fussy, conflict arises, it was internally for me a real bummer. Externally, I could kind of, you know, smile it through, but internally it was a real bummer.
Yeah.
And that sometimes caused me to go inward and feel frustrated. And I'm sure that came out too.
And with the frustration, did that come out, you know, for type ones, a lot of times they're trying to stay buttoned up and maybe repress some of that frustration / anger, disappointment, what, you know, whatever level, you know, it is, and kind of repress it again to appear more in control. But really internally, it's like things are simmering and it's like, I really don't want to get to a boiling point. And so I'm going to just like keep this at bay and I'm going to try to fix things, reform things, perfect things, you know, as best I can so we don't get to that place. So the repression of the frustration, the repression of the irritability, the anger, whatever you want to call it, tends to seep out sideways. And I would love to hear when those moments happen for you, how did you communicate in a way that was less helpful to your kids? And it could be even through body language. You know, you probably weren't yelling, you know, and doing big things, but how did you communicate that might have landed on them in a less helpful way?
And I do wish they were here to answer that. kind of fun. Because they are older. And I would say you're exactly right. It wasn't so much on the tip of my tongue. I didn't necessarily, you know, lose my, and Alyssa, you can probably agree, I didn't lose my temper. I wasn't a yeller, a shouter. But behind the scenes is more where that anger would come out, would just built up frustration. I think with the kids, that would be an interesting question, which I'll ask them, but I would say they probably could feel a level of just disappointment. Like, ah, man, this just, you know, had it all planned out. We were going to go to the circus. We were going to go to the zoo and it was going to be so fun. And it rained and then y'all lost a shoe and just kind of a feeling of resignation of like, I tried so hard and it didn't work. Yeah.
Did, were there moments where, like when they were, let's say fighting on the picnic blanket, when everything was, you know, set up for their success, that instead of like, say being overly controlling or yelling in the sense of anger, were you at all kind of critical or judgmental with the thought I'm being helpful, you know, like, cause I think a lot of type ones think they're being helpful, but it lands on other people as judgment, criticism, perfection. But the one is like, I'm just trying to help.
Right.
Has that been true for you with your kids?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, just with my son and trying to, you know, we had a conversation the other day about his grades and it was a conversation of like, his grades aren't bad, but we could see knowing what he's capable of, and then feeling like maybe he's not reaching his own level of what he's able to do, and just trying to encourage him and, hey, like, we want you to at least do what you are able to do to your best. And this doesn't feel like it's your best. And so we just want to encourage you to maybe work on that a little bit harder, and not trying to make him feel like you must get all A's and you must, you know, meet this, you know, you must get on honor roll every single time. Like, that wasn't what we were trying to explain, but that's what he was feeling. Like, he was feeling like, well, what I do is not good enough, or what I do is not, you know, ever going to be what you need it to be. And it's like, no, I just see so much more in you. And I'm seeing that you could maybe, you know, make some changes to just trying to find the right way to explain that to him, so that he's not receiving it in a way that's not helpful, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think if anything, for me, I probably overcompensated in an effort to not be critical. And I would just shift into a different gear of probably a little bit more of that peacemaker wing. And I would just leave it. I was probably less vocal and more internally resigned to just, I don't want to push. I'm so hyper aware, because I've been working on myself really as long as I can remember, to not be critical and judgmental externally as maybe I can be internally. Is the minute that comes up, I kind of try to shoot that down. Why? Because it doesn't feel like the right thing to do. It doesn't feel like a good person to be critical. And so that overrides my desire to be critical, to the point that I probably didn't. I mean, I'm glad to hear that you did that, Alyssa, but that you said, I think you can do more, because if anything, I wished I would have certainly not pushed or pressured my kids, but I probably lowered my standard in an effort to not be critical and not push them away. And my natural oneness probably didn't get to come out as much. I was constantly kind of suppressing that and going into my, you know, 9 peacemaker wing of just the peace, or going into that 7 part of me, which felt way more fun in my family. We're all in the gut triad, my whole family. I'm married to an 8 with a strong 7 wing. Our oldest, my daughter, is also an 8 with a strong 7 wing. And our son is a 9 with a 1 wing, and I'm the 1 with a 9 wing. So you can see the foursome splitting right there into 2 parts, it seemed like. And we can get into that, but I really probably over-identified with my son. And there was a lot of triangularization. That's a word.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, where it was kind of like, ooh, we've got the aggressor. We've got the aggressive stance. We've got people coming forward. And then we've got the victim, the person that's just kind of getting it, taking it. And then my job, woo, that I gave myself, nobody asked me to do it, was to be the rescuer.
Yeah. Now, it's so good that the self-reflection and the understanding of you and your family. One thing I want to point out, though, it's what's so interesting is, as you were saying, that you actually, when anger, frustration, all those things would rise up, you would actually try to go the extra mile to go an opposite direction. Although the defensive strategy, or the defensive mechanism of the type one, is reaction formation, which is that. So like, when anger comes up, it's like, wait, no, that's bad, so I'm going to do the opposite. And it's not that it's the opposite, that it's not true of you. It's not the opposite that you're being fake. It's not that. But it is a way to go, no, that's wrong, that's bad. What is the other way of doing it? And so actually, I want to piggyback on that topic, Jen, because I think this goes really great with your journey with SoberSys. Because there's nothing wrong, well, at least in our opinion. I know there's going to be people listening that any touch of alcohol is wrong and bad. From the Presbyterian perspective, there's nothing wrong with having a glass of wine. But what you recognize was there was something else going on underneath that was activating the continual desire of drinking, and that alerted you to change, to go a different path. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about how God has used you as a principled reformer, a person who loves to improve, make things better. How not only have you done that for yourself, but also how you're doing that for other women and their own journeys.
Well, yeah, this is actually a huge part of my parenting journey as an Enneagram One. Just a little background, because I do agree with you, Beth, you know, we're not here to talk about drinking itself being right or wrong. But for me, I didn't really start socially drinking at all until I was a young mom. I was already married about a decade, had kids almost school aged. I would say they were kind of 4 and 5. When I was just doing a network marketing job that got me out of the house in the evenings, I was at happy hours. I just started socially drinking. And I know for me, I can just say as an Enneagram One, especially, I really just felt like this immediate anxiety relief. And it's almost like my shoulders came down and my overthinking, over responsible, always on top of it, mom self, wife self, could finally kind of relax, man, just take the edge off. And so I spent my time in my 30s navigating that world. And I noticed that early on, like with my kids, drinking wasn't out of a stressful place. It was more of a social thing. I thought it would be fun to connect with my husband, to go on date night. But I noticed when my oldest turned 13, I also turned 40. And that was a key time for me. My 40 to 45 was her 13 to 18. And that was a specific period of time for me where, and I did want to talk about this today because I think it's not talked about enough at all with moms of any Enneagram type. And that is rejection from your children, which is totally normal and natural on their end. So I don't think I got abnormal rejection. Right. I think I wasn't prepared for any rejection. Why? Because I thought I'd done everything right to set them up for success, to not turn on me as teenagers. So when that happened, naturally, as it does, I guess I say naturally as it does, I look back at myself as an Enneagram 1, 14, 15, 16-year-old. Oh, I might have thought it, but I didn't say it.
Yeah.
I might have felt that way towards
different kids of different types.
Shown them. There was never, and Alyssa, I'm curious what you think too, but as a teenager, I was completely responsible, compliant, a rule follower, borderline goody-goody, just doing it right. You don't have to worry about me. Nothing to see here. I mean, so for me, when I got any kind of like verbal disapproval from my kids, especially the Enneagram 8, I took it so personally. It actually wounded me. And again, that's my work. It's less about the people around me. It's more about my internal world and how that fit into the messaging that I heard, which is you are being rejected right now because you're not good enough and you didn't do a good job, or this wouldn't have happened. Where did I go wrong? Yeah. What did I possibly do wrong? And because I didn't necessarily have that same personality type towards my parents, whereas my husband totally did with his parents. So when that came along, he was like, oh yeah, blow it off. It's nothing. It just let it roll off. I was like, what? I really internalized it. And so for me to then go from just kind of a social, take the edge off kind of fun, I started looking at that wine o'clock as like my way to kind of put up a barrier. It was almost like my defense mechanism, my armor. Of like, you can't really hurt me. My armor is going to be that glass of wine because I'm going to feel a little bit less. I'm going to numb my acute awareness of what is happening here, what's out of order, what's not working. I can see what's not working. I know what's out of order so clearly, and I can't seem to do anything about it. So I'm going to need to numb that because I feel a little bit helpless, like my hands are tied. And so if my hands are tied, well, I might as well enjoy it a little bit because there's nothing I can do here. I felt out of control and I felt a little bit of helplessness and rejection. And so for me, and then I could go on and on. I don't want to monopolize the situation here, but so for me, I would be super sober-minded, responsible by day, wake up, have my, you know, prayer time with the Lord, have such good intentions. I'm definitely not drinking tonight for any reason. I don't care if it's a book club, a storm rolling in, networking, whatever. I'm not going to drink tonight because I started to feel that conviction of I'm just not living wholehearted. I started feeling like I was living with a divided mind and at odds with myself. Like everywhere I went, I was in this internal fight and mental tug of war. And that was exhausting. So I had the good intentions, but by 1 o'clock, all it would take was, you know, a comment on the way home from school. And it would just, I would just internalize it. And then by 5 o'clock, what I call 1 o'clock, I'd be like, you know, just going to have a glass. And then maybe I'll have another one because it's only 5:30, you know, before I know it. Then I've got the shame and the frustration of now that's not right. That's not the example I want to portray. And now I'm being actually judged for that, which just kept the cycle going. And that's why I'm so passionate about
because
women.
Those that don't know about type ones, you know, what's really distinct with the type one is this, the inner critic. Now, we all have an inner critic, but the type one's inner critic is like a megaphone at their ear, and it is constantly berating them of what is wrong, what needs to be fixed, whether about themselves, what's around them, other people around them, the world, you name it. It's constantly blaring at them. And what I'm guessing, tell me if I'm wrong, is that alcohol, which was your choice of numbing, there's lots of ways to do it. It could be food, it could be I mean, it could be just, you name it. It could be buying a lot of things, you name it. But for you, the wine, I'm guessing, helped to turn the volume of the loud inner critic down just enough where you weren't just inundated with it. Is that kind of what was going on?
Totally. It was just exactly like you just described. It was like turning down the volume. I'm still high functioning. I'm getting stuff done. I'm not the crazy mom that's just out drinking or, you know, just not, I'm just not fully there enough that I am also numbing a lot of my joy, resilience, ability to do hard things. But I'm also numbing the hurt feelings, the rejection, the conflict inside, the conflict outside. For sure.
And then the problem is the next day, that inner critic is like, oh, by the way,
let's do it at 3 a.m., shall we? Let's do that at 3 a.m.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I'm going to add another big thing.
Dread having.
You need to feel guilty for drinking and shame.
Oh, yeah.
And
wake up with a little bit of a dry mouth and thinking, oh, no. Oh, I did it. I kind of did it again. I wasn't going to have anything. And 2 or 3 glasses, maybe even finished off a bottle, which I
thought. But before people start thinking like, okay, so the solution is to never drink. Well, that isn't the actual, the drinking isn't the actual problem.
Correct.
That is a mechanism, just like people can overeat. Well, you can't stop eating.
Or shopping or watching Netflix or exercising. Yeah.
Right. It's what's going on underneath. And so just quickly, and then Lisa, I want to hear, you know, from you of, you know, the inner critic, what that's been like, maybe things that you've noticed that you've tried to use to turn that volume down to. Because I mean, as I understand it, and hey, my type one wing comes in occasionally and it is brutal when she comes on board. And I call her Vicious Victoria when she's like that.
I have it named Brian. That's great.
So Jen, if you can quickly, so that people aren't thinking this is about making the right choice of not drinking,
right,
or not drinking, what did you actually find was more true? And then, of course, what then Sober Sis became, but what was the truth that was really going on?
Yeah. Well, and I just recently said this, I've said it in my book. I really didn't have a drinking problem. I had a thinking problem and a heart issue, but the thinking, the mindset, I think for me, I was always trying to control things externally to feel better internally. And when I realized, wait a minute, I am so responsible. It's not a bad thing, but I'm not responsible for others. I'm responsible to others, but not for others. I'm only responsible for myself. I can control my thoughts. I can, with the Lord's help, I can control my thoughts. I can control my responses. I can control what I put in my body. And that's about it. About it. When you boil it all down, I can control what I think. I can work from the inside out instead of hoping that everything around me aligns so that I'm okay. And I also had to lean into the fact that I'm okay to not be okay. And I'm definitely okay if people around me are not okay. And I've heard that mom slogan, that phrase, you know, you're only as happy as your most unhappy child or whatever. I've heard that before. Mm-hmm. And I think that outsourcing of your happiness, your joy, your resilience to anything, it's an inside job. And so I think for me, having to go, okay, it is 9:00. I do want to numb out a little bit. I do kind of want to check out. What do I want to check out from? Why do I want to check out? And if I check out, what is that really costing me? What's the opportunity cost of checking out a little bit? A lot. And so I really started going to my mindset. What was my mindset?
Yeah. I love that. So Alyssa, what about you? Like, what are some things that you've noticed that are really hard and that inner critic just will not stop? And what are some strategies you've used that you've noticed they could be good strategies and healthy strategies and godly strategies that have really worked and are great? And then other strategies that you're like, yeah, I was really hoping that this thing would keep the inner critic at bay and that didn't work. And it's actually caused even more chaos inside. So what about you as a mom?
Well, one of the things that I started doing for myself a few years ago was I started doing CrossFit because I was having a lot of like mental struggles with, you know, like myself or feeling like I was not, you know, doing enough, or so I needed something that was mine, just kind of an outlet. So I started doing that a few years ago and I really enjoyed that. And about a year ago, let me think. Yeah, it's well, 8-10 months ago, I had some kind of back issue, health issue that I'm working through still to this day. And I have had to stop doing that since then. And it has really had me, in some essence, I've kind of spiraled at times about like, okay, now I'm in this situation where I can't do things like I normally would, even just on a normal day-to-day basis level of meeting my own expectation of wanting to provide awesome meals for my family every night or taking my kids to all the things or, you know, whatever that might be, and having to kind of reevaluate that. But then taking that piece of something that I had found that I'd finally really enjoyed that was something for myself and having that stripped away was really hard too. And, so I have really, it's something that we should do anyways, or whatever. It's beneficial in terms of spending time with the Lord. But for me, like that has been what I have found to be what I have as my go-to to try and help quiet that down. And I don't know, maybe that was part of the reason why, you know, I've kind of am in this season that I'm in, but, you know, maybe it was to point my mindset and my direction more in that direction to focus more on the Lord in this season and hear what he has to say for me. But that has been a huge help in helping quiet that down. And then also like having good people that I can kind of bounce things off of, whether that be my husband or a friend, that are good sound advice people that can really be like, hey, like, here's actual reality, or here's where you're actually succeeding and doing well. Let's take all this head trash that you like to call it and set it over here. And let's really truly dissect what's actually true about what you're hearing, or what's actually going on. And that's really helpful, because I think that inner critic for me can really cause me to spiral, and those thoughts oftentimes aren't even true, but they feel like truth. Because you can come up with all these reasons for yourself as to why, like, well, this is true because, you know, this is what's going on, or because of X, Y, Z. And in reality, like, it's not actually, you know, true, or not as strong as a thing as what we're making, a big of a thing as we're making it out to be.
Yeah, like, and that's why I use that analogy of it's the inner critic is like, it has a megaphone, like, mm-hmm. it's making it a really big deal. And sadly, when I talk to most ones, the inner critic gives the impression that it's basically the Holy Spirit, or it's what you should follow. And I'm like, yeah, you know, the Holy Spirit is loving, kind, peaceable, good, faithful, you know, all the fruits of the Spirit. There is no more judgment because of Christ. So no more condemnation. Like, he is gracious. He's, you know, all the things that, you know, the scripture talks about God and Jesus in the Holy Spirit. And the critic isn't that way. Now, that doesn't mean that everything the critic says is wrong or bad, but to hang our hat on the inner critic as if, oh, that's what I need to follow. No, because if it's not speaking life over you, and it's not speaking truth over you, it might be telling you to do something quote unquote right, but is it with the right framework, the right mindset? And that's where the renewing our mind, where we can do the same right thing, but we need to do it from a place of freedom, a place of liberation from Christ, unconditional love, great, you know, all the things that he gives us. And so I know that that's a real moment of freedom for type ones when they recognize, wait a second, yeah, I always thought that was the voice I have to follow. And I've always followed it no matter what. And you're saying I don't have to? Like, wait, what? And it's a real, like, their mind doesn't even know what to do with it for a while.
Yeah.
But then once they start to see the two sides, okay, what is the Holy Spirit like? What is Jesus like? And then what is this inner critic like? Oh, okay. And then start to really assess who do I want to listen to? Again, we'll follow truth where truth really is, but follow the one that actually speaks life, you know, over you.
And I think
so. Is that kind of
what y'all talk about is connection. You know, if we're isolated and we are in our own head, or like you were talking about the spiral, it's really easy to kind of lose what is true. Obviously we've got God's word to tell us, but sometimes we need a friend, we need a comrade, to speak into our life that truth, or just even speak into other people's life the truth, and how that benefits everyone. And so I think connection, that's another thing that really changed for me. I really tried to kind of fix a lot of things on my own, thinking, well, get it together, Jen. This is not okay to talk about, especially in Christian circles, anything that's stereotyped or stigmatized, or that has a lot of legalism around it. It was really hard for me to even talk about a topic like drinking, because it felt like such a black mark on me. Like, oh no, I don't want to be labeled. That kept me very silent for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Even the name sober sis was a challenge for me to use the word sober, because of all of the connotations. I don't even really identify as like a sober person. I'm more of a sober-minded person. Yeah. And so I had, you know, working through that has really been with others, not by myself.
Yeah. So as we wrap it up, one thing I'd love for you guys to do is think about through motherhood. I'm particularly thinking in my mind, the young mom, because Libby, my daughter, just had our first grandson 2 months ago. So it's just like fresh on my mind, the young mom, which is true, because you kind of get thrown into this world that you thought you were ready for. And it's very different. Mm-hmm. So definitely keep that in mind. But it could be moms of any age, any stage, and they're a type one. the things that you have learned that God has given you the ability to reflect on, understand, can you share what you needed to hear, what you wished you would have heard back, you know, then, like almost speaking to yourself? Alyssa, what about you? What would you say to the young moms?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that come to mind. The first one is finding the beauty in the imperfections, because I feel like I, for a long time, felt like, you know, I use my daughter as an example. She is very free spirited and she loves to be creative. So when it comes to picking out her clothes, for example, in the morning for school, she'll put on, you know, a polka dot pair of pants with a striped shirt that has rainbows all over it. And, you know, completely mismatched everything. Right. And for a long time, it was kind of like, well, you can't wear that. That doesn't match. Like, you need to, you know, put this outfit on instead, kind of a thought. And wrapping my mind around the idea of like, no, like there's beauty in the imperfection, or there's beauty in the, you know, not being the right way, you know? And so finding and seeing her joy and being able to put together what she felt like was a matching outfit, because her shirt had a rainbow on it, even though it was completely different. And then she had rainbow on her pants. So she has this rainbow colored striped shirt on, and she has these pants that are orange, but they had rainbows on them. So it matched, you know, like whatever her mindset was about that, but the joy in seeing it from her perspective. So that was one of the first things, but I can't remember what the other thing was that I had now, but yeah, just finding the joy in the imperfection, like just not taking things so seriously and allowing the kids to, that was the other thing, allowing the kids to be kids. Like sometimes I get so wrapped up in, you know, having to get these things done or checking off the things off of my box or, you know, whatever that might be, and forgetting to slow down and let them be kids, like let them make the mess. Let me put my to-do list aside and find the joy in the moment and not be so focused on all the things that I have to do, because that stuff will be there. As my husband says, it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to get done. So like, it's not with the laundry, another one, like the kids, you know, aren't going to maybe fold it exactly the right way. And it might have a little wrinkle in it in a spot that maybe I would fold it in a way that it wouldn't, but they're learning how to fold laundry. They're taking some responsibility. Yeah. They're helping me get a task done that then now I don't have to do everything myself. And so, you know, learning to let some of that go so that we can find joy in the imperfections and in the moments and, you know, relax in that. But also when we do that, we're letting them learn who they are. We're letting them learn how to be their own people and also gain some responsibility and some skills that maybe they wouldn't learn if we do the dishwasher ourselves all the time, because it's quicker and we're going to do it the right way. Whereas, you know, if we let them help, then they're learning how to also do that task and take on some responsibility. So,
yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's so good. And what I hear in that, which is so fun, is the seven part of you, you know, so being connected to the seven is like being flexible and like connecting and having joy. But then I also hear the four part of your heart that you're connected to that's like, I want them to be them. I want them to know their individuality, their uniqueness, how God created them to be versus me putting them in the right, quote unquote, right box.
Yeah.
Exactly. But then also the nine part that's like very open and receptive and willing to listen to your kids and, you know, love them right where they're at. And then the two part of your heart that's like, you know, I'm going to be there to support them no matter what their needs are. And so it's this, that's where the Enneagram is so amazing, because though you lead with your type one core motivations, these other parts play a very beautiful role in supporting that. Now, obviously, if you're not in a good place, they also chime in with not so helpful things. But that's what I was hearing from what you were saying. And it's just such a beautiful picture of how God creates us in a very complex way. You know, it's not like you're just this, you know, you're one number, which is why our book's called More Than Your Number. You're more than that. And and how God is shaping you as a mom and how that's reflecting is just really awesome to hear. Jen, what about you?
Well, first off, I totally agree with that. I think when my kids were younger, that was my mindset too. It's like, man, it's not a good day, if you don't come in a little messy, because that means, you've had fun. Like we used to, yeah, lots of water hose and mud pies in the backyard. I did kind of embrace that because I think it was really fun. I think, talking to a young mom, or a mom who has not yet entered those teenage years, I've come out of, but I wish somebody would have said this to me, that it's okay if your kids pull away and go on the dark side of the moon for a minute. They will come back. You didn't lose them. They're not gone. They're just distancing a little bit, and it's going to be okay. And during that time, what an opportunity to work on your own self-care, your own boundaries. I think I got so focused on trying to make it all okay around me that I forgot me. And then I was of no service to anyone. If you don't put your oxygen mask on first, how are you going to help anyone else on the plane that feels like it's going down? Put yours on first. It's okay to take some time and just go, you know what? That is crazy. That is absolutely crazy. And that's okay. It's, a hormonal whirlwind when you're sometimes crossing paths with emerging teenagers, and just lots of grace and lots of space for yourself. And, don't forget to take care of yourself. That's not selfish. Self-care is not selfish. It's vital. It's not optional to living a really wholehearted life. And, boundaries, work on it. Work on you during those challenging years instead of forgetting you and just trying to change everybody else.
And I think most of us, no matter what type we are, we're trying to change other people or fix other people so that whatever expectations we think will alleviate the stress or the anxiety or the anger or sadness, whatever we're dealing with inside, if they would all change, then we would be fine. Yeah, that's any type, right? So I'm thinking, well, if everyone's just happy, then I'll be happy. And it's like, okay, Beth, that never is going to happen ever. Like, it's true. I mean, like, you cannot make everyone happy. And like you were saying, a mom's happiness is, what'd you say, is correlated with the least happy child. And that is like the statement of a nine. Like, and it's, and if I, and I do try to live that way, right? Like, not knowingly, but the nineness of me is like, yeah, that's absolutely true. You have to make people happy. But then when I get out of that and recognize, no, that is not truth, that I can be okay, even if they're not okay. And not that I want my kids to not be okay, but it's God that has to do the work in and through them. And even in their circumstances, I can support them, I can cheer them on, I can give them resources to help them if that is needed. But ultimately, I have to trust him and they have to trust him. And let me tell you, that's hard,
It is
right?
very
Like,
hard.
that's not
Showing your kids when they're little and young, but it definitely as they continue to grow up and are starting to really notice the adult external world around them, that's when it's really time, especially as a one, to start dropping the perfectionism and the performance and start going for presence. Go for presence with your children instead of your performance. They're not going to judge you, rate you on that. At the end of the day, they just want you. And I thought I was doing a good job by removing a little bit of my rough edges and my jagged parts, and just being like this pleasant, chill mom that was kind of gliding through the evening with a little slight buzz on. They wanted my presence, not my performance and not my perfection. And they wanted to see me practice. I mean, how great is that for your kids to watch you make a mistake, fall down, get back up, recover? That's more valuable. And because of my struggles, actually, that's opened the communication with my now adult children so much more than any of my perfectionism. It's not my achievements and things that I've done right that actually connect us. It's the things that I've struggled in and recovered from and moved on from and come through that
And
makes
been
it safe for them
authentic
to come to
about.
me with their stuff. I'm like, oh, let's talk about it. You really can't shock me. You really can't, and I think they feel
And
that now.
I know that you are like this, but being authentic in those struggles and how you're growing in those struggles, that's really what they're looking for, because they're going to go through their own struggles. It may not be the same struggles, but how do I go through struggles? And if we don't, if we don't model what it's like to go through struggles,
it's more valuable than how can I keep it together, show them how to just keep it together all the time. And just, it, that's just not going to work in the real world. I'd rather, show them the tools.
Alyssa, what were you going to say?
I was just saying that's really good. I mean, that's really relatable to me in this season. I mean, in general, we've tried to have conversations with our kids about, you know, like, here's what's going on, or here is, you know, maybe something that we're struggling with, or because then it's in those moments, like you said, that they learn and they grow. But I think, you know, it's also an opportunity for them to see God working in those hard times. To show him that, you know, God is real, and to help them, you know, in real time, in real life experience, be able to see that, you know, this is how God is helping us in this situation, or this is where, you know, we're getting, how we're getting from point A to point B. We're not doing it on our own. So I think those can create really cool teachable moments for them too.
And that's scary for all nine type parents to be that real. And it's going to be scary for their own type reasons. And so for the type one, it's like, but if I'm not good or perfect, you know, whatever word you want to insert there, then how are they going to know how to be good? How do they know how to be wise? How, you know, you put the word in there. And like we're saying, it's like, it's really in the imperfections and owning them, being humble, asking for forgiveness, whether it's to the person, to God, to both. And then moving towards health and growing, that's where the connection is really at. And of course, age appropriate, right? So there's certain things that you will reveal to your four-year-old that's age appropriate, and things that you won't, compared to like my children who are 23 and 26, and I even have a grandchild. So the things that I can talk to them about is way different than what they are as a child, but it's still the premise of being humble, being teachable, listening to them, connecting, asking for forgiveness, repairing, restoring. And it's really Jesus Christ through it all, right? Like, because he's the one who has restored us. He has forgiven us. He has the victory for us. And so we can rest in knowing he will take care of all of us if we are humble and dependent on him. And that's easier said than done.
But it's good in those seasons for the kids to be able to see us as real people, right? Because I mean, I don't know about y'all, but when I got to a certain age, I don't remember exactly when that was, but you get to the point where you move from seeing your parents as your parents to your parents as people. And that was a really big shift for me. And my parents are great people. I love them very much, but there was a level of like, I think if I had seen, you know, maybe them handle some of these situations in front of me a little bit or in a certain way, maybe I would have, you know, handled things differently as an adult or whatever that might be, you know, but them being able to see us as real people now will hopefully help them as they get older and understanding how to approach life. So,
I agree 100%. That's so, so good. Well, guys, thank you so much. I really just want to say thank you for being vulnerable, being transparent. It's hard as a one, right? Because it's like,
it's hard.
I mean, even though you know, it's good to share these things. There's a part of that one that's like, yeah, but we want people to know we're doing it right. And the beautiful thing is I know you guys are killing it. You're doing a great job. We were even saying the person that couldn't show up today, they had an emergency. We're like, yeah, they're not just flaking out. It's a one. Like they had something legitimate come up. I don't know what it was.
We are, but we know the reason.
As a type one, we know it was legit.
For sure.
And so you are doing a fabulous, wonderful job taking care of your kids. And then the steps that you're taking to go to those vulnerable places and to show up real and honest and to trust in the Lord for yourself and for them, that's truly remarkable too. So thank you for being authentic so that people can hear the highs and the lows and everything in between as being a type one mom. So thanks guys for sharing that with us today.
Yeah, of course. It was fun.
Thanks for having us on.
I am so thankful that they were able to share authentically with clarity, with honesty about their highs and lows about being a type 1 mom. I hope those that are out there that are type 1 moms that you feel understood, validated, seen. You might have laughed through it. You may have cried, but I hope that you really felt understood. For those that aren't type 1 moms, I hope that you better understand the amazing qualities that type 1 moms have, but also the struggles that they go through so you can have more compassion and empathy and move towards them with greater love. Now, if you're interested in being a part of a group that's similar to this that can really share authentically and laugh and cry and everything in between, then you're going to want to join my Enneagram for Mom cohorts. These are cohorts of 25 women. So it's limited spaces, and it starts the week of June 10th, all the way through the week of July 9th, 8 weeks, 90-minute sessions. You can choose either a morning or an evening, and this is just going to be so much fun and so real at the same time. If you're interested, get your spot right now at yourenneagramcoach.com/cohorts and let your friends know, because once the spots are gone, they're gone. I don't want you to miss out. Next week, we're going to listen to type 2 moms. I can't wait for you to hear what they have to say. I'll see you then.